Om Jnanati Nirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Miditam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopistam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tathati Shapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavanscha Shri Rupam Chagrajatam Shahagana Raganatam Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savatutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Shahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho, Dina Bandho Jagatpate, Gopesha, Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta Namostute, Tapta Kam Shana Gaurangi, Radhe Vrindavaneshwari, Prashabhanu Sute Devi, Pranamami Hari Priye, Vanchako Patrubhyascha Kripasindho Pyaevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vashadi Gaur Bhaktavinna Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Yeah, just put it down. Today is the auspicious appearance day of our founder Acharya. His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. That's what I thought. Doesn't need to be so close anyway. So I've been asked to say something about my personal association with Srila Prabhupada. Notice how temples always buy unidirectional mics, which are the wrong type of microphone for this purpose. Yeah. You have to be directly speaking into it. That's what it's designed for, so that you stick it into, like, put it up next to a guitar and get only that. But for a speaker, it's the wrong thing. And therefore, it's what we always buy. During Srila Prabhupada's time, I was not one of the leading men. I wasn't a sannyasi or a member of the governing body. I was a rank and father. Not that I'm much more happy. So I didn't have as much association with Srila Prabhupada as many of my leading godbrothers. But anyway, over the years, something. And so I'll try to comply when I said something. Usually I remember things in context, but just speak about Prabhupada isn't a context. Anyway, I have some notes and I'll try to say something. I first met Srila Prabhupada at 26 Second Avenue, which was, people asked, how did you meet Drew Bronto? I joined Discount. That's how I met Bronto. I joined at 26 Second Avenue in 1968. At that time, Drew Bronto had gone back to India on account of his heart stroke. And then he was just coming back to America during that time. And 2 months after I joined, he came to New York, and that's where I first met him. Prabhupada used to speak in the mornings and on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday evening. And on the off nights, he would meet with the devotees in his apartment behind the temple and talk about so many things. One time at Second Avenue, a yoga society girl came. She'd been attending our classes coming to the temple. And so when Srila Prabhupada came, she took the opportunity to attend the meeting. In the 1960s, maybe it hasn't changed so much, people who were members of yoga society were very lovey. Everything was one, everything, harmony was the ultimate goal of everything. There was really no difference between anything and everything else. There was unity, there was oneness, there was love. So, and the Gurujis at that time, the yoga teachers, would teach all these things, that yoga means love, yoga means unity, yoga means all of that. So, Srila Prabhupada gave the class, and of course, with these people, you couldn't say anything, because whatever you said, their outlook on life was ultimately, or their philosophy was ultimately impersonal. God was the one, and we're not different from God. And finally, we merge back into God, or we are God. They had all of these ideas. And whatever you might say in opposition to these ideas, they would just go along with. So if you said, well, if we're all one, then if we're God, then why are we suffering? They'd say something like, well, I can see why, from one point of view, you look at it that way. Something that you couldn't, you know, it's like trying to have a conversation with them is like trying to nail jello to the wall. It's just impossible. Even if you said that their guru was a fool, they'd say something like, yes, sometimes our guru says that he's a fool. Aren't we all fools before God? They'd say something, anything not to disagree with you and keep their own point of view. Anyway, so this girl was coming to the temple, quite a nice girl. And after Prabhupada gave his talk, he called for questions. And this girl asked, Swamiji, isn't it true that ultimately everything is one? And she said it in such a way as like, you and I know the secret, don't we? Certainly Swamiji would figuratively to pat her on the head and agree that she was quite far along in spiritual realization. And Prabhupada said, no. He completely disagreed. But how can we be one? We're different from God in so many ways. How can everything be one? There's so many varieties. You see the flowers, there's red, there's yellow, there's green. And Prabhupada gave the example that we have to give our service to Krishna. Not that you can give service everywhere. Just like when you put food in the body, do you think you can put it here, or here, or here? Prabhupada said, no, you have to put the food in the stomach, so that it will be distributed to the whole body. So Krishna is the stomach of the complete body, so service has to be given to Krishna only. One time, Prabhupada came from Hawaii to, on another occasion, to New York, and he remarked that the local newspaper there had said that the Swami is a small man, but he has got a big message. Prabhupada liked that. Program in the evening was always the same for the kirtan. He would lead the Mangalacharana prayers, chanting them himself. You can still hear on the Bandehang album, album by that name, how he would chant. Sometimes the mridanga players would speed up on him, and Prabhupada didn't like that. He would slow them down. Then Prabhupada would chant Sri Krishna Chaitanya and Hare Krishna, and then stop and chant the Premadhwani prayers. Then he would speak, and then there would also be another kirtan afterwards. And then always distribution of prasada. It could be big or small, but there had to be prasada. Usually it would be something like apples cut up with a little sugar. One time Prabhupada took the apple. He said, the apple is Krishna's mercy on the country. In India we have mango.
You're broadcasting into the temple. Will you please be silent there?
Yeah. You can speak, but you can't hear. Prabhupada had his sitting place in his room. He had a little mat he would sit on, and he had a little tin suitcase, yellow tin suitcase, and he would put his typewriter on that for typing his manuscripts or whatever. That was his desk. I remember seeing it one time. Do they still sell Eaton's Ink Eradicator? It used to come in a little tin cylindrical case, and Prabhupada had one of those containers full of pennies. Pennies. If Prabhupada would find a penny, he would keep it because it was Krishna's property. At that time, there were only men in the ashram in New York, and there were two married couples who lived outside, and there were three high school girls who used to come for the evening programs. They were also initiated devotees. They would come. But they or some of them were a little sentimental. So when Prabhupada would do something, they would get all rock star about it. If Prabhupada would make a gesture, they would, oh. Or if Prabhupada would drink water, they would, oh. Everything was giggles and gasps and, oh, Swamiji. And one time Prabhupada told him, you should be a little brave. It was arranged for one of the girls to get married to one of the brahmacharis, but her mother objected because she said that first she should have some experience and meet different boys, and then she can get married. Prabhupada said, just see, the mother wants the daughter to become a prostitute. Anyway, Prabhupada won, they did get married. Still they're married. Not as good as Kachin. The day after I was initiated, Prabhupada went to Boston. And I also went. This is maybe May of 1968. Prabhupada's cook was Govinda Dasi, who's in Hawaii these days. And her health was not so good, so she was having trouble keeping up. So they needed an assistant. And there were two candidates, one Devananda could go, or I could go. Or Satsurubhar suggested I could go, who was the temple president in Boston. But I'd never cooked anything in my life. So it was decided that Prabhupada would be there 4 weeks, so I could go the first 2 weeks, and Devananda the next 2 weeks. And if things didn't work out, Devananda could come sooner. Anyway, more or less worked out. Prabhupada's diet at that time was very, very simple. He used to take a simple dal and some little Brussels sprouts, baby Brussels sprouts, cut in two and sauteed in a little bit of butter with some cumin and turmeric and salt, and some spinach and eggplant and tomato, I think, just subcumate of that, and nice chapatis. At some point, Prabhupada was dissatisfied because the chapatis weren't coming out very well. The problem was that in this house they had electric burners, not gas. So, and they were old electric burners, 1968 electric burners. So they would either be too cool, or when they finally heated up, they'd be too hot. So they'd either your chapatis would be raw, or they'd be crackerish. And there was also no flame to blow them up on. So Prabhupada complained, and then the next day, same thing, Prabhupada complained. Then Prabhupada, the next day, he said, you make the dough, and then tell me, and I'll come and make the chapatis. The kitchen was only this far from Prabhupada's room. It's a little house. So we made the dough, and Prabhupada came in. And the first thing he did was he took a pan and put it upside down over one of the burners so that the heat was rising to the bottom of the pan, and he got a nice even heat. So then he was eating his chapatis on that. And maybe some of you know the system, how to cook a whole stack of chapatis at once. Have you seen that system? You put one chapati down and you cook one side, and then you put another chapati down and you cook another side, and pretty soon you've got a stack of six chapatis, and you're always turning one over so it's getting a fresh side, and you're always taking one off that's completed, and you're always putting another one on. We'd never seen such a thing in our life, and it was astonishing to see Prabhupada doing that. And he was doing it very fast, and we were two of us, Govinda Das and I, were rolling, Prabhupada was saying, faster, faster, because we couldn't keep up. Then finally, to blow the chapatis up, Prabhupada took the grill out of the oven, put it over another set of burners, so that the heat from the burners rose, and Prabhupada put his chapatis on the grill, and they all blew up. So Prabhupada was expert at everything. There was one engagement, there were many university engagements in Boston, and at one of them, Prabhupada spoke, and then there was a big meeting room, room outside, a big hall outside. We set up our books there, and we distributed prasadam there, and talking with the people there, big engagement. So I was talking with some students, and all of a sudden, the room just started going, you know, this big wave went through the room, you know how that happens, like if there's something happens, then all of a sudden everybody's astir, what happened? So there was this big wave that went through the room. What happened? And I didn't find out until later what had happened. It was this, that there was one Indian professor there who was arguing quite strongly that everything is one. And whatever Prabhupada said, no, everything is one. Finally, Prabhupada took him by the shirt and said, if everything is one, why don't you wear a cotton ball instead of a shirt? I think that was probably the... I don't think he had anything to say to that. But Prabhupada made his point very strong. One time I brought Srila Prabhupada his prasadam in Boston. And then as I was putting it in front of him, I saw that there were these big black ants that had begun crawling on the plate. So I started to brush them off. But Prabhupada said, no. He said, let them play. They are also living entities. There was another boy. He wasn't from Boston, but he came to Boston for Prabhupada's programs. He'd been associating with the devotees and was very interested in Krishna consciousness. Eddie, his name was. He was a hairdresser by profession. I think he was already initiated by some yogi, but he was very attracted to Srila Prabhupada. So he was coming to all of Prabhupada's programs, and he was very humble. When Prabhupada was leaving the temple, Eddie would be there to help Prabhupada put his shoes on. So he was very, very nice. And on one morning walk, he asked Srila Prabhupada if he could be initiated. And Prabhupada said, first you learn the philosophy. He said, otherwise, if today you come on sentiment, tomorrow you will leave on sentiment. Which, in fact, is what happened to me after some time left. At Temple University in Philadelphia, Prabhupada gave a talk. And at that university, there was one Swamiji who was teaching a course in Vedanta. So after Prabhupada's lecture, one student asked Prabhupada a question about Vedanta. And Prabhupada asked him, what is the meaning of Vedanta? And the student couldn't answer. He was taking a course on Vedanta, but when Prabhupada asked him, what is the meaning of Vedanta? He couldn't answer. So Prabhupada himself answered, he said, Veda means knowledge, and Anta means the last word, the conclusion. Vedaishta Sarvaira Hameva Veda. The conclusion of Vedic knowledge is to know Krishna. This is actual Vedanta, to understand Krishna and engage in the service of Krishna. So later Prabhupada was talking about it, that they're speaking Vedanta, but they have no idea even the meaning of the word Vedanta. Sometime later, maybe 1969, we moved to a second temple at 61 2nd Avenue, up the block, bigger place. And one day, an elderly gentleman came to the temple. He was a member of a yoga society, and he had with him a letter from Srila Prabhupada. He'd written to Prabhupada something. Prabhupada said that when I come to New York, then you can meet me. And Prabhupada was in fact in New York at that time, and so when the gentleman presented his letter, Brahmananda, the temple president, had me escort the man to meet Prabhupada at Prabhupada's apartment. So the man was very very good gentleman. And he said to Srila Prabhupada, he said, Swamiji, I like your movement very much, but one thing is that one of your disciples said that such and such person is a rascal. And he mentioned a prominent person from Bengal who sometimes regarded as an incarnation of God. And so he said that your disciple said that you said that Swami such and such is a rascal. And I didn't understand, because it seemed to me I always thought that he was a very holy person. And I don't know why you would call him a rascal. And Prabhupada said, who has said this? Who has said that I have called him a rascal? And the man said, you didn't say. If someone has said that I have called him rascal, and I have not said, then he is rascal. So now the man was quite, felt much better. Then Prabhupada took a little blue book from his bookshelf and said, you know this book? So the man looked at the book. Oh, yes, Dr. Such and Such, Vedanta Society. So he was very happy about that also. And Prabhupada opened the book and said, read, what is his translation? The verse was, Manmana Bhavamadbhakta Madhyaji Mam Namasku. So the man read that, always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, to me offer thy homage, then I promise that you will come to me. Prabhupada said, yes. He is a very good scholar. He has translated very nicely. Now, commentary, what does he say? The man began reading, it is not to Krishna that we have to surrender, but to the unborn, beginningless, something within Krishna. Prabhupada said, just see. Therefore I say they are all rascals. That Krishna is saying me, and they're saying not Krishna. Then Prabhupada quoted, Namam duskrita namutha prabhadyante niradhama. Maya Pitagyana Asura Bhavashrita. Men who are four kinds of men refuse to surrender to me. Four kinds of miscreants refuse to surrender to me. those who are like asses, the lowest among men, those whose knowledge has been stolen by illusion, and those who are demonic in nature. And then Prabhupada explained each of these words, mudha, ass, naratma, the lowest among men, maya, pratigana, those whose knowledge has been stolen by illusion, and asura paramashita, those who have taken shelter of a demonic mentality. And very strongly Prabhupada explained that Krishna is saying, surrender to me. And they're saying something else, not to Krishna. Therefore, Krishna speaks in this way. Miscreants, lowest among men, asses, knowledge stolen by illusion, demonic in nature. Then Prabhupada said, it's not my saying, it's Krishna saying. What can I do? Then Prabhupada also said, sometimes strong words are needed to awaken a sleeping man. By the way, if you have any questions at any point, you're welcome to raise them. Another occasion at 61 Second Avenue, there was an initiation ceremony. Big initiation, many devotees were given initiation. And afterwards, there was a big kirtan, and all the devotees were in ecstasy, escorting Prabhupada back to his apartment. There was a picture, it was a little famous, all these devotees in kirtan, floating in ecstasy, on this sort of crummy Second Avenue scene. And all jubilant. And Prabhupada's walking with them, very grave. Prabhupada only said, we have increased the disciplic succession from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One devotee, Chandanacharya, gave Srila Prabhupada a watch, and then a year later, Prabhupada gave Chandanacharya in exchange his own watch. Then a year later, Prabhupada met Chandanacharya again, and he said that your watch is not very accurate. It was maybe, a minute off. And Chandanacharya said, yes, but the one you gave me was less accurate. And Prabhupada said, yes, but it was fast. Prabhupada one time, again, on one of those visits, said that he quoted a verse from Chaitanya Bhagavat that the person who's muchi means cobbler, becomes suchi if he takes up Krishna consciousness, yadi Krishna bhajan. And the person who's suchi, a brahmana, becomes muchi, a cobbler, if he the yadi Krishna jaja, if he gives up Krishna consciousness. Cobbler is supposed to be very low occupation, because the cobbler has to take the dead skin, the skin of a dead animal, and from that he makes shoes. So it's not a very high class occupation. The Shudras have this work. So Prabhupada explained that the Brahmins who are proud of being Brahmins simply on the strength of their family descent are no better than cobblers. Said, because they're skin dealers. I have Brahmin skin. So he criticized that it's not by birth, it's by qualification. One time in, again at 61 Second Avenue, one German devotee passed through. His name was Uttama Shloka, not the Uttama Shloka who was in Chicago, but another Uttama Shloka, German. And he recounted that Srila Prabhupada had told him, just try to hear yourself chant sincerely. In May, June of 1969, Prabhupada went to New Vrindavan, quite a rustic place at that time. And there he performed an initiation ceremony. While he was performing the initiation, Prabhupada would do everything himself, light the fire and everything, chant the mantras, give beads. So while he was doing the fire ceremony, he took one of the sticks he was using and he dug it a little bit into the sand at the base of the fire and held it up. He said, this is very instructive. On the stick were some dead moths. Prabhupada said, the fire does not jump out at the moth, but the moth flies into the fire, being attracted by the glitter of the fire. So in this way, we're attracted by Maya, and we're voluntarily entering for sense enjoyment, and the result is death, or repeated birth and death. Prabhupada explained that Krishna and Maya are there. Just like if you turn your palm this way, it's in the light. And you turn your palm that way, it's in the darkness. But when we turn toward Krishna, it's in the light. When we turn away from Krishna, darkness. There's something I remember. Prabhupada was in Boston in 1969, and maybe those who were there would have to confirm my memory to see if I got it right, but this is how I recall it. In Boston, the temple was on the second floor. So you come in the front door, and you go up the stairs and enter the temple. At the top of the stairs was a door to a hallway, because there were other rooms to the side of the temple. So there was one lady, Vaibhavati Dasi, who just recently had a baby. So she positioned herself on that landing just by that door, so that when Srila Prabhupada would come up the stairs to come into the temple, he would see the baby and then come into the temple. So, as planned, Prabhupada came up the stairs. As planned, he saw the baby. And he asked, so, Krishna is nice, or your baby is nice? No purport for me, that's what I mean. The ISKCON Press was located in that house in Boston, on Alston Street. Two big two-press, one, and then a second press were installed there, and typesetting equipment, and so on. And the artists were there, and paintings were being done, and transcription cassettes were being received in the mail, and Prabhupada's dictation was being transcribed. So there was a lot going on there. Prabhupada came and he toured the press, and Advaita, who was the press manager, asked Prabhupada, Prabhupada, could you name the press? As Prabhupada was looking at the machine, could you name the press, like give a name? Prabhupada said, it is already named, ISKCON Press. And Prabhupada instructed him to keep the machine clean. He said, if you keep it clean, it will last a long time. He also told him not to wear booties while working with the machine. Dangerous.
That was that North Beacon Street?
Sorry, North Beacon Street. That Austin was the township, sort of. The area was Austin. And it was North Beacon Street. 32 or something?
I think 40. Maybe
40. 49 or 42. I don't know. Anyway, yes, it's North Beacon Street. Thank you. Downstairs was finding equipment. Prabhupada came and toured that also. And photo with mechanical equipment for shooting pages, which is what he did those days, making negatives. Prabhupada at one point said, this is the heart of ISKCON. And one devotee said, Prabhupada, you're the heart of ISKCON. And Prabhupada said, yes, and this is my heart. And you know who's in the heart? That's Krishna. In December of 1969, I was there with Prabhupada on the disappearance day of his Guru Maharaj. And I was watching rather attentively. I thought, you know, something would happen. Prabhupada would, you know, maybe express some. Prabhupada was totally grave. Totally grave. And he cooked that day. He cooked Guru Dal. Later, the press moved to New York City, to Brooklyn. There was a big, we all went out to receive Prabhupada at Kennedy Airport. He arrived on TWA in what was then a brand new terminal that had been designed by a famous architect. The terminal took the form of a like a bird, so that the central part was the body of the bird, and then there were like tunnels that took you out to the gates, these sort of rounded stucco terminals with tunnels with red carpets that you went through and they fed into the main area. So we were in the main area to greet Prabhupada when he arrived. And those days, the greetings were quite tumultuous. We used to bring dozens or even 100 devotees or 200 devotees to the airport. You'd have kartals and mridangas and so much paraphernalia. We read in the description of Krishna entering Dwarka. So they were throwing grains and they were throwing scattering yogurt and so many things. So there we were in the terminal with the grains and the yogurt and the conch shells and the kartals and the mridanga and flower petals. And we were an airport manager's nightmare. So anyway, we caused several nightmares for airport managers. These were the early ones. So a big, huge gathering of devotees. And then, so the plane, the time came, the plane landed, devotees all struck up a kirtan, roaring kirtan, big kirtan. Then the word started going around among the temple managers that Prabhupada's name wasn't on the passenger manifest. In those days, you could find out who was on the plane. Prabhupada's name wasn't there. So it looked like we would all have to pack up our kirtan and just go back to the temple in Brooklyn. But just then, Prabhupada came down the tunnel. And the way things worked in those days, it works even more strictly now, but you couldn't go through those tunnels. The passengers would come out, and then you could meet them. And I remember seeing Prabhupada, he had his cane, and he was walking very aristocratically, and it really looked like he was just floating down this tunnel and getting, and the devotees are there, and Prabhupada's getting closer, and the devotees are all chanting and dancing, and he was and waiting for Prabhupada to be among them. I had a big garland of gardenias that I'd been given to give Prabhupada, so I put this garland on Prabhupada. Big garland, down to his, practically down to his knees, or down to his feet. And Prabhupada said, I read your article. It was very nice. And I didn't know what he was talking about. What article, what? But then Prabhupada said, I read your article, who is that girl with Krishna? I'd written an article for back to Godhead on that name. Prabhupada said, it was very nice. And that would often happen that Prabhupada would say something and you just wouldn't know what to say. Typically the question was, is everything all right? So everything is all right? And usually, because Prabhupada was coming, you had so many things that were going on that you were going to put to Prabhupada. You know, Prabhupada, this devotee is, stole my sleeping bag, or you know, whatever it is, this devotee is doing this devotee is doing that, or I have this problem, I have that problem. And Prabhupada would say, so everything is all right? And instantly, everything was all right. You couldn't think of what wasn't all right. The whole laundry list, the whole inventory of things that weren't right would just dissolve. They'd be like bats when the sun comes out. They just disappear, scattered, just like that. One time, Srila Prabhupada called me and said, the press was a very important thing at that time. Still, it was the forerunner of BBT, this kind of press. Prabhupada called me into his room. He said, I heard that the press manager is not attending the programs. Is that true? And of course, I didn't exactly want to rat on him, so I gave some sort of answer. Prabhupada said, go over there and tell them to close the press. If they cannot attend the programs, we do not need this press. Go over there and tell them to close the press. Which I did. And anyway, the press remained open. But after some time, actually, that person left and the press also moved. Prabhupada was meeting with the artists on another occasion. And he disapproved of what he called bust pictures. What are these bust pictures? By which he meant head and shoulders of the acharyas. Prabhupada was taking his massage one time. Someone had given this some electric massage machine, and Prabhupada was trying it out. So he's sitting taking massage, and he was criticizing these, what is these bust pictures? Which of course the artists like to paint. And Prabhupada said that they should not, he said the paintings are not for decoration, they're for worship. He said, so the full form should be there. And then Prabhupada's sitting there taking his massage, forgive me, he said, the full form should be there, therefore They're not for decoration, they're for worship. Bande Guru Sri Charanal. When Prabhupada left on one of those occasions, we'd arranged for to use the VIP lounge, a VIP lounge at Kennedy Airport. It was an evening flight. And again, all the devotees, so many came. The room was a fair-sized room, but it was totally packed out. All the devotees that could crowded into that room. And the rest were crowded outside the room. Someone gave Prabhupada a picture of the deity from New York, Radha Govinda, nicely framed. So Prabhupada was sitting, he took that picture, and there was a little table next to him, so Prabhupada put the picture on the table. And Prabhupada, someone gave Prabhupada some flowers, so Prabhupada took the flowers and put them next to the deities, in front of the deities. Then Prabhupada, someone offered Prabhupada a nice plate of fruit. So Prabhupada took the plate of fruit and put that in front of the deities. Then someone gave Prabhupada some incense, some agarbatti. There was no place to put the incense. Prabhupada took a piece of watermelon off the plate, put it to the side, and put the incense into the watermelon, and put that in front of the deity. And then he said, now have kirtan. So in that way, he turned the VIP lounge into a Krishna temple. Gopal Krishna Maharaj came. At that time, he was in his purvashram, in householder life. And he came, he was working for a large company. He came from work with his suit and tie and offered obeisances to Prabhupada and apologized for coming in his karmi clothes. Prabhupada said, not karmi. He said, karma yogi. Anashrita karma palam karya karma karotiya. The person who performs his prescribed duties in Krishna consciousness is actually a yogi. In New York, there were many initiations, say in 1971. Devotees would come from so many different temples to be initiated. And I remember that Prabhupada would, sometimes there would be so many initiates who would be, say, ratnas, pancharatna, chaturatna, triratna, so many jewels. Or there'd be ratas, ekarat, dasharat. Sometimes there'd be Indras, Virendra, Kapindra, Surendra, Mahendra. So in that way. One day, well maybe it was more, it was for the girls it was names of Maya. So I remember there was a devotee, he'd been a kind of a yogi on his own. His name was Sai. He was in Hawaii, but then he joined and all of his followers joined. And the girls all had names like Lolita, Radharani, and Prabhupada gave them names like Chaya, Durga. And one girl he named Mahamaya. And everyone laughed, of course, that the girl was being named Mahamaya. The Prabhupada said, don't laugh. He said, Mahamaya is another feature of Radharani. For the Brahmin initiations, Prabhupada had said that first initiation should be liberally given, and for second initiation, we should be strict. So at one initiation, there was a list of initiates, and Prabhupada asked the GBC men, so have you examined this list? You know, have you carefully gone through this list? And of course they hadn't, so the list got cut way down from the original number. And I remember one prospect who was caught was absolutely irate. I am too qualified to be a Brahmin. After one lecture in question time, there's one devotee who is quite an orator. He could speak. And he began, Srila Prabhupada, we have a great desire to distribute your books. Prabhupada said, just keep that desire, that's all. One time, one of the leading devotees came from another temple with his infant son strapped on his back and offered obeisances. He probably gave a big, broad smile. That's the balance to the other baby story. How are we doing on time? I think we're out of time yet.
It's agreeable with you and the devotees. We could do a side of our team if you'd like to continue.
You want me to continue?
Yeah.
Yeah? In 1972, in July, Prabhupada came to New York, and I remember him. There were some sannyasis there. There were only a few sannyasis in ISKCON at that time, and John and others. And I remember Prabhupada telling him, preach, 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 preach. One local GBC man came in one afternoon and offered Srila Prabhupada a garland and said, Srila Prabhupada, here's a nice fresh garland for you, big garland. And Prabhupada wiped off some of the water from the garland and said, a little too fresh. There was one sannyasi who's passing through, who was saying what sounds to me a little speculative, because he was sort of dealing with the question of, well, he was dealing with the verse Nikunja Yuna Rati Kali Svita, and sort of raised the question that how could the spiritual master be in the spiritual world with Krishna, because we see that he's here in the material world. So I think he was speculating that it had to be something figurative, otherwise spiritual master would be like bumping into walls or something, because he'd be disoriented. So when I met Srila Prabhupada on some occasion there, I began to ask about, I intended to ask about that question, about that verse, Nikunja Yuna Rati Kali Svita, to reconcile this point. And Prabhupada cut me off in the middle of the question. And I suppose he must have heard a different question many times before. So when I started to ask about Nikunja Yuna Rati Kali Svita, Prabhupada said, if he's in the Madhurya Ras, that it applies if the guru is in the Madhurya Ras. In other words, it doesn't have to be that he's in that relationship. That's what Prabhupada answered to the question. I didn't push my original question. That's what Prabhupada said.
So what was your question again?
problem?
Excuse me?
What was your question?
What was the question? Well, the question would have been that, is it true that the spiritual master, that this is just figurative, and that the spiritual master is not really in the spiritual world of Krishna? Or is it literally true? That would have been the question. We understand from teachings of the Goswamis that even while physically present in the material world, the spiritual master is able to be present spiritually, taking part in Krishna's pastimes. But that wasn't known at the time. One time, Prabhupada went on a morning walk. I think I was on that walk. But it was a little distant location, so Prabhupada went in a car to the walking place. Then he was coming back, and as we rounded the corner in the car and came toward the temple, there was a little mailbox, not a little, normal mailbox, by the, not far from the temple. And as we rounded the corner, there was a man who was picking up his son so that the son could put a letter in the box. And as Prabhupada saw this scene, his eyes got very big, and he just became absorbed in seeing. And it was just, how long does that take? But it seemed as if the time had stretched. And Prabhupada was absorbed in watching this scene. And I was wondering what Prabhupada would say. Maybe he had some reminiscence from his childhood or something like that. And Prabhupada was seen. Prabhupada was seen, and then he broke his absorption in the scene book, and Prabhupada said, the little boy, on his own, what can he do? But the affectionate father, when he helps, then it is possible. One time we went for a walk on the side of the East River. And from there, we could see the headquarters of the Watchtower Society. They have large headquarters in Brooklyn, New York, with the tops of the buildings decorated as if in a tower. What is that called? Crenellated? You know, those, like the way you have a watchtower with stations for guards and so on. So the devotees were all saying something. That's how it was on the walks. Everybody would want to say something and get a response from Prabhupada. So someone was saying, Prabhupada, they print their own literature there. Prabhupada, they have 15 presses. Prabhupada, they store enough paper there so that in the event of a war, they could go on printing for a year and a half. Everyone had some factoid that they were putting forward. Prabhupada didn't say anything. Finally, Prabhupada said, so, what is their philosophy? Of course, nobody knew. The temple room in Brooklyn was long and narrow. The deities were here, Prabhupada's asana was there, and the door was here by which he would leave and go to his quarters. So one time, one time, Prabhupada had finished the lecture, and as he was getting up to leave the temple room, Bhairaj Prabhu started a kirtan. Bhajan, actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur or Narottam Das Thakur. And Prabhupada had gotten down from his asana and offered obeisances. And then he was getting up. But as Bhairaj was leading, Prabhupada became stunned. And he just froze where he was, not standing up, not moving, and just looking at the deities. And Bhairaj kept the kirtan going, and the whole room just became flooded with wonder. The whole room became flooded with wonder and just kept building and building. Kirtan was building. Prabhupada was frozen, looking at the deities. The devotees were just getting absorbed in this transcendental atmosphere, transcendental mood. And then Pujari closed the curtains. And Prabhupada got up and went to his bed. There were some... one time there was a drama performed in Brooklyn by the devotees. We had quite a good troupe of actors. Rasagya was the heroine. Lokamangala was always the demon. Who else was there? Rasagya's husband? Lohitaksha. Yes, Lohitaksha would be one of the lead players. And they were really very good. And they performed on this occasion, the kidnapping of Rukmini. And Rasagya was Rukmini. Lohitaksha. Maybe Lohitaksha was Krishna, and Lokamangala was Rukmini's materialistic brother. And it was just a wonderful performance. Prabhupada was sitting in a rocking chair in the audience, really appreciating the performance. When Rukmini sent a letter to the Brahmin, it was very beautifully recited. Krishna's, Rukmini is saying that I just want to be engaged in your service, life after life. And Rasagya is speaking and looking at Prabhupada. And it's just so wonderful. And when Rukmini was disfigured by Balaram by having his hair cut off in patches, Prabhupada said, oh, worse than death. On one occasion, I don't remember if it was that play, maybe it was, Prabhupada said the play was better than the book. On another occasion, there had been some, what Prabhupada considered to be disrespect, and there were some scandalous things going on in the New York temple at that time, at the upper echelons. And Prabhupada was aware of it, although he'd been very grave about it. He didn't. The story was that one Japanese woman had posed as the heiress to the Toyota fortune and had seduced the sannyasi, who was the local GBC man. And she wangled her way into staying in the temple and practically had made the devotees her servants. So many things were going on. And Prabhupada hadn't said anything to bust it up, although he was informed about what was going on. He'd sent some devotees to find out what was going on. Prabhupada got them married, but he didn't say anything critical. Then he came to the temple right around that time as part of his normal travel schedule. Gave a very heavy lecture. I don't remember the details of it, but it was a very strong lecture about disrespecting the spiritual master. I don't recall the details. But at one point, kirtan was going on, and Prabhupada's asana was there. Behind Prabhupada, there were pictures of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, like that. And at one point while this kirtan was going on, Prabhupada called for the temple president, Gopi Janavallabha. And Gopi came to Prabhupada, and while the kirtan was going on, Prabhupada said something to him. And Gopi's jaw just dropped. And later we asked, you know, what did Prabhupada say? And Prabhupada had mentioned the pictures, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, Bhakti Vinod Thakur. Prabhupada said, where is the picture of your Guru Maharaj? Of course, Prabhupada's asana was there, and when in his absence there'd be a picture on his asana. Prabhupada, that didn't count. Where is the picture of your Guru Maharaj? At the Krishna Balaram installation in Vrindavan in April of 1975, Prabhupada was very pleased. And the next day he was taking his morning walk in a mood of great pleasure. He said that to build the temple, he really pushed the devotees hard. Prabhupada said, I was practically whipping it. But he was very happy that it was open. He began speaking that Krishna is flattering Balaram. Krishna is flattering Balaram. My dear brother, all these trees are great sages. They are bowing down to touch your lotus feet. All these bees were formerly also sages, and now they're eager for your association. Prabhupada was telling that pastime. Then Prabhupada said that he'd established Gaur Nittai and Krishna Balaram just to establish this point that there's no difference between Gaur Nittai and Krishna and Balaram. Prabhupada said, if you're ever in any difficulty, you can go before Gaur Nittai or Krishna Balaram and say, sir, this is the problem, and they will do the needful. The press later moved to Los Angeles. When Prabhupada came in June of 1975, I was with some devotees who went up to Prabhupada's room. And Prabhupada was, settling in and talking with the devotees. And while he was talking, this tape is there. There's a karate studio next door. And Prabhupada's speech was being punctuated by the karate exercises. So Prabhupada speaking, and then you hear, "Ah!" And then Prabhupada speaks some more, "Ah!" And again Prabhupada would speak, "Hey!" And Prabhupada said, "One day death will come, and then your will all be finished." Vishnu John Maharaj, on that occasion, asked Prabhupada about something that Prabhupada had said in a lecture, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, while leaving this world, had said, "Now I'm leaving my work unfinished." Vishnu John asked what he meant. Prabhupada said he was a Vaishnava. He could have finished everything. But he's all powerful, Vaishnava. But he kindly left something for you to do. I was with Prabhupada one time in July of 75. He was walking on the beach, and I said to him, "Srila Prabhupada, since you've come to New Dwarka, the devotees say that the deities have become even more beautiful." Prabhupada said, "That is my anxiety." Walking. "That is my anxiety." Prabhupada said, "That is my anxiety. That after I leave, you will neglect the deity worship. And then everything will be finished." On those walks, there were always the GBC men, sannyasis, so many men, and Vishakadasi. She was always there because she was a photographer. So Prabhupada would sometimes acknowledge her presence. One time, he was talking about this statement that women have half the brain substance of a man. He said, "Of course, when she becomes Krishna conscious, then she develops the other half." In Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada mentions that there was a man who, because it says that men in the word mode of ignorance worship the ignorance? Maybe passion, worship the demons. Rakshas. Yaksharakshamsi Rajasa. Yeah, men in the word mode of passion worship the demons, and Prabhupada gave the example that there was a man of his acquaintance who was worshipping Adolf Hitler because thanks to the war this man was making good money on black market. So Prabhupada mentioned that on the walk, that this man was worshipping Hitler. Prabhupada illustrated, "Jaya Hitler, Jaya Hitler." Prabhupada also said that last year when he'd come, he said, "I was working, but I was also eating." He said, "Now I'm working, but I'm not eating so much." He said, "So it's a bargain for you. You're getting a bargain." One time we'd found at Prabhupada's those two prayers that he'd written on the Jaladutta, they were in manuscript. Someone found them in some box or something in New Dwarka. So we, Radha Balava and I, brought them to Srila Prabhupada. I said, oh, where did you get these? And he began, and he said, did you find some scroll also? And rolled up paper? He said, no. Well, what was that, Prabhupada? I said, Prabhupada, that was my horoscope. But we didn't find it. And then Prabhupada began explaining those prayers. And he said, I don't see Jadurani at the lectures. So I said, well, no, she's there, Srila Prabhupada. She's in the balcony, because in Los Angeles there's a balcony, and the ladies used to be on the balcony. So I said, she's on the balcony. But then she comes just at the last minute, just before you speak, and then she leaves right away and goes back to her painting. And Prabhupada said, Sadurani. And Prabhupada said, this balcony system is very good. He said, and if possible, separate entrances also. On that occasion, Prabhupada also told the story of the gourd and the stick and the wire. You know that story? That a man is walking, and while he's walking, he sees a stick lying on the ground. He said, is it a very valuable thing? So we said, no, Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, no, it's not very valuable. And he's walking, and then he sees a wire. Is it a very valuable thing? We said, no, Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, no, it's not very valuable. And he goes a little further, and he sees a gourd. Is it a very valuable thing? And we said, no. And Prabhupada said, no. But an intelligent person fixes the stick on the gourd and attaches the wire and makes a nice musical instrument. He said, similarly, I've collected all you American and European boys. I don't think I have electricity here, do I? And I'm going to run out pretty soon, and this is going to crash. Well, let's see how long it goes. There was a devotee, Krishnadas, whose sister is Saradhya, and he'd been, as a very young boy, he'd gone to Germany and started our first temple in Germany. Prabhupada was very pleased with him. He'd done very nicely. But after some time, he left the Association of Devotees. But in July of 1975, when Prabhupada was in Berkeley, Krishnadas had begun coming around again. And he came on Prabhupada's morning walk. And there was some like revival of the old relationship. Then at the end of the walk, Prabhupada had mentioned something. He'd been talking about separation. And Prabhupada was getting in his car to leave, go back to the temple, Krishnadas said, you must always be feeling separation from your Guru Maharaj. I was sort of prompting Prabhupada to say something on that topic. And Prabhupada said, that you do not require. That you do not require. That's another way of saying, none of your business, buddy. That you do not require. At the Rath Yatra in San Francisco, some politicians had been invited to speak. Some leading men, I think they were running for maybe mayor or something like that. And they both gave their talk to honor the occasion. And of course, the first guy, he just talked mostly about the needs of the city and basically why he should be elected, while, of course, honoring the occasion. The second politician spoke a little, mentioned Bhagavad Gita. Perhaps he'd read Bhagavad Gita, and he said a couple of things from Bhagavad Gita. So I was, then Prabhupada was to speak next. So I was keenly listening because I thought, you know, what will Prabhupada say? Now this man is, he's a politician, he said something about Bhagavad Gita. How will Prabhupada, you know, bounce off of that? And Prabhupada gave his, began his lecture and totally ignored everything they'd said. Didn't even mention it. So I've given the example many times, just as the hand has to put food in the stomach and so on. Totally ignored everything that the man had said. Gave him no importance. One time in 1975, again it was July, Prabhupada was in San Diego. San Diego is quite a beautiful city, and it's one of the idyllic Southern California destinations for surfers and that sort of culture. And Prabhupada gave a lecture in Balboa Park, which is the main park in San Diego. And it was a beautiful summer day, and the sun was shining down, and these young men with bare chests, bronze gods with fair hair and strong physiques were soaking up the sun. There were surfer girls, and another beautiful day in San Diego. And Prabhupada spoke, and his, as I recall, his theme was this rotten material body, and how everything will be finished. The lecture is there, you can hear it, but it was really just the opposite of where they were coming from. In 1976, Prabhupada was in Detroit. I'd been traveling a little bit with Satsrut Maharaj and his library party. I used to sometimes go out for my editing duties and just join the party a little bit for association. And so Prabhupada was in Detroit, and I was sitting with Prabhupada. And I mentioned to Srila Prabhupada, because I'd been speaking at different universities, that it's so hard to convince the students to stop sense gratification. And Prabhupada said, we don't say stop, but regularly. Also in Detroit was very, quite an establishment. We had a big mansion that was acquired with a ballroom in which there were naturally three divisions, as there are here. And Gordon and Ty were there, Radhakrishna, Krishna's beautiful black form, and Radharani's white, and then Jagannath was there. And Lekha Shravanti Dasi was one of the devotees. She and Ambarish had paid for the temple. She was the daughter of a very, of the leader of the labor movement, one of the leaders of the labor movement in America, really, started the, got the United Auto Workers going. He was a very prominent man. Was late at the time. But it meant that Lekha Shravanti was very well connected in Detroit. And so when Prabhupada came, she brought one gentleman who was an office holder to see Srila Prabhupada. The the black man, very well, very polite, very well spoken, humble man. So he came up to Prabhupada's quarters, and Prabhupada was very cordial with him. He said, so you have seen the deity? And the man said, yes. Prabhupada said, yes. Say, Krishna is also coming from your community. There was a journalist, Kathy Kerr was her name, who came to see Prabhupada in Toronto, where was the next destination. I think I was there, and I think I was given the task of bringing her in to see Prabhupada. She struck me as like just out of journalism school, just a young lady, and with the usual sort of questions: why do you shave your head? What's the stuff on your what's the mark on your forehead? You know, real what we might consider brainless questions. And Prabhupada just totally ignored her being a journalist. Totally ignored her being a journalist. And the way he treated her was that Krishna sent you here, and it's my duty to speak to you about Krishna. That she was a journalist didn't matter. And Prabhupada just preached to her about Krishna consciousness. And I think that was the occasion also where she again asked, as so many do, why do you shave your head? And Prabhupada famously asked her, why do you shave your legs? And then Prabhupada said, better to have a cool brain and warm legs. In July of 76, Prabhupada came to the temple at 55th Street in New York, which was, as Prabhupada called it, a skyscraper, many-storied building. And there was there were things that were going on with my editorial duties. I'd revised the translations and purports for the first canto. I'd compared the published edition with Prabhupada's, the edition Prabhupada published in India. I'd seen a lot of places where I thought that things had been left out or misunderstood or were needlessly distant from the way Prabhupada had originally expressed things. So I'd revised them, especially in the first and second chapters. I revised a lot of the translations. So I typed up the revised translations and put them in an envelope with a letter to Srila Prabhupada, a cover letter saying, this is what I've done, is this okay? And then I brought the letter up to Prabhupada's apartment to give to his secretary. But Prabhupada was sitting right there. So then Prabhupada had me come in and, what's this about? So I explained to Srila Prabhupada that we've done this revision. And so Prabhupada had me begin reading. So I read one verse, two verses, maybe three verses. Then Prabhupada's listening. Then he said, so what you have done? And I said, well, Srila Prabhupada, you've revised it to bring closer to what you originally said. And Prabhupada said, what I have said? And I said, yes, Srila Prabhupada. But then it is open. Another occasion, there was some chapter summary for fifth canto or Chaitanya Charitamrita that was missing. So we photocopied the original Bengali commentary, or Sanskrit commentary. I guess it was Bengali commentary for that portion, and put it in an envelope and again brought it to Prabhupada. And the idea was just to drop it off, and the idea Prabhupada will dictate. But right there, Prabhupada just dictated the translate the summary, and it was, I remember, thinking it was such a marvelous thing that just this sound vibration is coming directly from the spiritual world through Srila Prabhupada. There was a big Rath Yatra on that occasion also in New York, arranged by Jayananda Prabhu. And that was a grand occasion on Fifth Avenue, like a triumphant occasion for Srila Prabhupada. It was there that at Washington Square Park there was some heckler who was standing by the side of the pool there and just mouthing off. And the heckler found himself in the pool. At that time in 1976 also, I saw that Srila Prabhupada was chanting japa with great intensity. He probably would always chant, but on this occasion in 1976, I saw every spare minute he had his, every spare moment his beads were there, and he'd be chanting with great attention. Prabhupada's health was failing, beginning to fail by that time. I noted that. Well, how much time do we have now? We're just about out of time, right? It'll become 8:30 and then we have to stop anyway. I have to stop. All right, I'll tell you one more story. This is in April of 1975. Prabhupada was in Mayapur. And on a morning walk, I asked Srila Prabhupada that sometimes from the material point of view, we see that the spiritual master makes mistakes. And Prabhupada said, that is material point of view. Then I pushed it farther. I said, well, sometimes even in spiritual things, we see that the spiritual master forgets a verse or quotes a verse incorrectly. And that was a little pushy because so many times we've heard Prabhupada forgetting a verse or quoting a verse in a different way than the verse actually reads. So I raised it anyway. And Prabhupada said, that is material point of view. He said, we have to see. He said, the spiritual master is not a magician. We have to see how the spiritual master is preaching. That's the point. How he's absorbed in Krishna consciousness, how he's preaching the message of Krishna. Then Prabhupada gave the class. Then after the walk, so many of my godbrothers got on my case. You know, I was just a brahmachari. There were these GBC men, sannyasis. They started getting on me. You know, how could you ask Srila Prabhupada that? How could you speak to Prabhupada that way? And how could you, you know, so insulting, and really started getting on me. So after Prabhupada's class, I went up to Prabhupada's room in the Lotus Building. And I think Prabhupada was just taking prasad, or just finished. I offered obeisances. I said, Srila Prabhupada, that question this morning, Prabhupada said, what was that? I repeated what made reference to the question. I said, Srila Prabhupada, was that offensive? Prabhupada said, not offensive, just ignorant.
Sorry?
Just ignorant. So I was very happy. Ignorant is okay. Okay, so I think we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jaya. Sarva Veda Bhakta Vrinda ki jaya. Gaura Premanande.